Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. Troy Dooley here with Radio for Your Mind. And I tell you what, you know, this is, I don't know about you, but this has been a short week, but it's been a great week. You know, we were on the road all last weekend, going up to Alabama and coming back and enjoying the Memorial Day weekend. And this week we have just been cranking. And studying Dondi Scamanci's book has just, I mean, it's just wonderful. I can't tell you the difference that it makes in my life. And if you've not bought her newest book, Career Moves, I strongly suggest that you do. It is a book that has really, no matter where you're at in life, matter of fact, here's how she writes it. How to plan for success, create value for your organization, and make yourself indispensable no matter where you work. And it's truly, I mean, I don't care if you're a direct selling, I don't care if you own your own business, I don't care if you're in sales, whatever it is. This book right here plays a huge role. And today we're talking about bad moves. This is chapter 4, how to paint yourself into a corner and other lessons learned the hard way. Now, this, what makes this so unique and why I thought this was a great chapter to finish up on this week as we move into a Friday is because if you've not bought the book, you've got a chance this weekend to just go out and grab yourself a copy of this book, or maybe go sit down, get yourself a tea, a cup of coffee, a frappuccino, whatever they call them, and sit down at one of the bookstores and start reading through this, because you're going to see what I'm talking about when you study this book. And she puts I just love the way she writes her title, her little subtitles, 6 really good ways to derail your career. And I thought, man, here she is. You know, she's looking at this, and I started reading it. And I thought, man, you know, when you look at this, and this is how she starts out writing it. There are probably dozens of really good ways to derail yourself at work. Here, I'll outline what I call the big 6, and I'm betting you can relate at least to a few of the bad moves described in this chapter. And it's like, yeah, I could, all of them. The first one, and you guys got to write these down because you need to analyze them. The first one, avoid conflict. And I thought, well, that seems pretty simple, but how many of us do it? See, telling somebody to avoid conflict is sure easier than trying to avoid it ourselves. Dondi writes this, one of the most common issues I encounter in the workplace is conflict avoidance. How far out of our way will we go to sidestep unpleasantness of conflict? Now, see, a lot of times we will do that, but a lot of times we won't. We get our dander up. We do what I say. We let our ego take control. Because we're so freaked out at work, because we live in a common place where it's dog-eat-dog, where we're trying to protect what really isn't ours anyway. Sometimes when we should avoid conflict, we don't. So what happens? By feeding our fear of confrontation, we lose our way entirely. See, sometimes you cannot avoid conflict. Sometimes you need to stand on your values. Sometimes you may have done all the hard work and somebody else is stealing it. Now, you don't want to go get a ball bat, beat them over the head. But you need to know what you're doing and how you're doing it. Dondi writes this, and this is so good. I've seen entire teams hopelessly derailed by avoiding conflict. Take, for example, a project team charged with improving a customer service process. As the group formed, it was all courtesy and charm, and everybody was happy. Everybody was just having fun. Just thrilled to be on the team, as they put it. Within a very short period of time, 2 strong personalities emerged and cracks begin to show. Project meetings were dominated by arguments between the outspoken 2. Others hesitated to contribute, and several team members simply gave up trying to get a word in edgewise. Well, when I started analyzing what she was writing, I realized that happened so many times. See, there are things that we don't need to get into a conflict about. There's things that we can just move forward with. But at other times, you have to stand up. And it's funny. Matter of fact, she talks about this follows the perfect model of Patrick Lencioni. I always say his name wrong. He wrote the 5 five dysfunctions of a team. I have it here. He says, what begins as artificial harmony leads to a lack of commitment and low accountability. It sounds something like this in your head. I don't think we're on the right track, but I'm not comfortable with the conflict. So I will nod and smile. I know this will never work, and when it doesn't, I will be right. There are times, if you're trying to make career moves, if there's times you're trying to go laterally inside the corporation, you're trying maybe to move up or to change things, you cannot avoid conflict. You just have to make sure that what you're getting ready to be in conflict about is worth it. Because the same thing of avoiding conflict, if you just get in conflict to be in conflict, you know, there's some people that just like chaos around them. Okay, that isn't going to work. You have to be prepared. You have to be moved forward. Gandhi writes this way, to face conflict in a productive way, you must have your script ready. Be prepared to talk about what is happening and the impact that it's having on you, on relationships, and on the results that you seek. He goes on to say, finally, plan to ask for what you need specifically. Conflict is negotiation. That's what you have to be asking for. It's not a matter of right or wrong in career moves. It's a matter of what's going to work. If there's a conflict, you have to learn where the compromise needs to be. If you're dealing with people that will not compromise, now this is something to think about. If you're dealing with people that will not compromise, you may be on the wrong team. See, Tom Hopps says, surround yourself with superstars. If you've got a professional conflict creator on the team, I doubt that they're a superstar. Number two, runaway emotions. Now, for the ladies that are listening to this show, God created you guys more emotionally than men. And sometimes the emotions can run rampant. I can say that because Dondi is a woman and she's writing this book towards women. But listen to this. She writes, lack of composure also belongs on the short list of bad moves. This one is tough because feelings are powerful and it isn't easy to rein them in. When things don't go as planned or when we are under a great deal of pressure, emotions can flip around us and tip us over. To make matters worse, when we feel like it's managing our emotions probably matters the most. When we don't want to manage the emotions, that's when you have to. A great movie. And this is a Marvel comic movie. It's called Elektra. It's about a superhero. She's a female. Paige just loves this show. And the reason she does is because here's a fragile teeny girl that grows into a girl that knows how to control her emotions. See, there is a time and a place for emotions, whether it's in the workplace or at home. Most of the time, though, people let their emotions run rampant. Women, for the most part, will cry. Men will yell. There's two sides to everything. Once the emotions start to run real high, your blood pressure hits a certain level, your adrenaline is rolling, you do not think rationally. Prime example is a mother giving birth. The blood pressure starts to flow. The emotion starts to run high. The baby's in the birth canal. And their blood pressure hits a point. God created people this way. Once that blood pressure hits that point where there should be pain, where the pain should be unbearable and the women should not be able to handle it, they continue to push through. And out the other side comes a beautiful child. There's a time for emotions to play a part, and there's a time when they're not. If you're a crier, if you're a yeller, if you're somebody that wants your own way, if you just get frustrated, you got to learn to control that. And Dondi gives us some things to look at. And here's what you need. These are five great remedies that men and women can use to work on their emotions. Number one, the pitch of your voice is controlled by the amount of oxygen crossing the vocal cords. When you're under pressure, you feel your throat tightening, breathe. In martial arts, we breathe through our nose, we breathe out our mouth. If you're in conflict, emotions are running high, don't worry if you use scope that morning. Breathe through your nose, exhale out your mouth, get the oxygen on your vocal cords, and relax. Number two, become more aware of your emotional triggers. Use index cards to catalog at least 20 times you've lost composure. Most people have a composure problem, have 3 to 5 repeating triggers. Okay, criticism, loss of control, a certain kind of person, an enemy, being surprised, a spouse, children, money, authority. I'll use a prime example. Out of all the people in my life, I have one individual who is not a relative that can cause my emotions to run high. Matter of fact, publicly, 2 or 3 times, they have purposely pushed my emotional button. Now, because I know that I can be very emotional, I also know these triggers. I understand how to breathe deep. I know how to exhale correctly. One thing that I don't control very well is the color of my face, whether I'm mad or I'm embarrassed. I think we call that our cheeks flush, except it's not just my cheeks. You will actually see redness creep up my neck. You will see veins on the side of my head. And that usually spurs this person on. And I've had to learn to control that. I've had to learn to breathe deep so that in public I'm able to make coherent statements instead of stepping across a desk and literally ripping their head off and spitting down their throat. There are times that we're going to have to work through those triggers. What I have done is totally eliminated that person and those type of people from my life. Sometimes we have to do that. The third thing that she says to help us here is once you've identified your patterns, think about why these scenarios are a problem for you. What is at stake? Do you fear embarrassment or failure? Are you afraid of being taken advantage of or losing control? See, I automatically know that this type of a person comes from 3 or 4 different experiences I had growing up. I know that they started out from the rejection side of it and being ridiculed in public. I know that at that time, at least 2 out of the 3, there was nothing that I could do about it. And the third time, I lost control. And the physical damage that I did to the other individual is something that I have to live with. But I never want to lose control like that again. Because when I lose control, because of the training, of the discipline that I have had, when I lose control, I can actually physically hurt somebody very bad. So I do my best never. And my wife will tell you, I don't have a lot of anger in me anymore, but I grew up with a lot of anger. So losing control was very easy in the beginning. Now I've got a lot of different things that Dondi talks about in her book that are in place where that doesn't happen. I've been known to withdraw if I'm going through a situation just so I can stay in control. I've been known to just flat out hang up on people and not worry about it. But we all go through these situations. Number four, awareness is a beginning, but ultimately you must prepare for more effective responses. Review your triggers. Think about your objective in each of these scenarios. What do you want or need in these situations? What is the best course of action to achieve the goal? And number five, and this is the one that I do best, intentionally shift your focus from the emotional to the logical aspects of the situation. See, I know that if I let my emotions get out of control, I have the physical ability to use my hands to kill somebody. And I'm not saying this egotistically. I'm just saying I understand what can happen if I lose control in any situation. We all go through different scenarios. if you're at one of these spots where you avoid conflict at all costs because you're afraid of losing control, then you need to work on this. Dondi's book isn't built to cover this, but it's good at teaching us the basics. If you want to get deeper into this, this is where you've got to buy Tom Hopp's book, Time Out, Winning Strategies for Playing a Bigger Game of Life. It's perfect. Now, for you females on here that want to, that may be having this issue yourself, Melissa Williams, who's going to be on Aces Radio Live tonight, is the female version of Tom Hopp. She can actually work you through to where you can start to gain control of the composure. You can start to gain control. This is important. This is why we do these radio shows, is because when Jim and I are here and we're talking about something, it's because we personally are talking to ourselves. We know that we have to do this. Number three, you've got a naivety about office politics and the grapevine. And Dondi writes it this way, and I think this is great. I've yet to find an organization without a grapevine or politics. Both of these are givens. They do exist, and you must manage yourself in relationship to them. If you don't, eventually you will step into something that is both unpleasant and unproductive. There are rumor mongers everywhere. The grapevine gets rampant. Walk into the boss. If you're a beautiful, smart, sexy, wonderful professional female, and you walk into your boss's office and you close the door, and there's no window open, and you're in there for 45 minutes to an hour, there's going to be somebody jealous in the office that's going to start a rumor. If you're a beautiful, professional, powerful, smart female boss, and you happen to call the new, young, good-looking stud that you just hired into your office, and you close the door for 45 minutes to an hour, somebody, because of politics, is going to start talking. If you take that special client out, and it's just the two of you, somebody's going to start talking. Politics and the grapevine run rampant. It's all over the place. Now, here's how you can fix this. You buy Dondi's book, Designed for Success. In Chapter 10, she covers 12 rules of engagement. Tips for breaking through the invisible barriers between department, between work groups, also known as broker problems. See, you're going to have politics. You're going to have people making the power plays. You're going to have the people that are going to try to shortcut you, go around you, walk over you, beat you up, trip you up, you name it. There's ways around this if you do it right. Politics, Dondi writes it this way. Politics and grapevines make fabulous mentoring case studies. They are the situation mentoring is made of. Bring your story to a mentor, talk through the scenarios, practice reading the plots, and develop viable strategies to navigate these sensitive and potential career-busting scenes. I love the way she writes. Here's the way I would have wrote that. You know what your objective is. You see the battleground in front of you. You know who the enemy is. You've got to figure out a way to walk around them, walk over them, walk through them, or just blow the living snot out of them to get where you want to go. Now, that's the man's version of the beautiful way that Dondi wrote about going to your mentor. But the scenario is the same, because that's exactly what the other person is thinking about. Now, I'm not saying do that, but you have to have a strategy. You have to have a blueprint. And if you really want to do this right, and you've got to deal with office politics and the grapevines, here's how you do it. Use the law of connection. You find the 1% that you can agree on with that other person who's out there to get you, because that's what politics are about. You find the 1% that you can agree on, and you do everything in your power to focus on that 1%. You do everything in your power to make sure that person understands. You're not the enemy. You can be trusted. But what you don't do goes back to number one that Dondi talks about. You do not avoid the conflict. You make sure people know who you are, where you are, and where you stand. And at the end of the day, when they see that, I guarantee you the truth will come out. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. Matter of fact, not too long ago, because of politics, because of grapevine, I watched my buddy Jimmy go through this. And he stood his ground. He was very meticulous in explaining the details, exactly what had transpired. This is what you have to do if you're going to make it. The fourth thing, failure to act, to decide, to accept responsibilities. Now, this sucks, but I see people do this all the time. You've got to brace yourself. You've got to be ready. Good, bad, or ugly. Folks, I put my butt on the line every day politically, and I mean not politically, but publicly on the Internet. I either say a company's good or bad. Yesterday, I did a blog post walking through a pretty ugly financial statement for Lightyear Wireless. Actually, Lightyear Network Solutions, the parent company. I walked all the way through it. And I showed people, here's what you have to look for. If you're going to be with this company, then you need to go in with your eyes wide open. This company has lost $29 million since 2004. But yet the owner of this company has continued to write checks and raise funds and put money into it. And when they went public back in February, he was able to raise an additional $5 million. He believed so strongly in himself, in his team, and in his field force that he was willing to convert over $25 million of debt into equity. What that meant was he was willing to give up his first position to get any of his own funds back. Because debt holders always take role over equity owners. And he said, I'm going to put skin in the game. Now, I got lambasted for that. The funny thing is, I also got lambasted when I didn't talk about another public company's financial statement. So you can't win. So you got to realize, sometimes you're going to fail to act. Sometimes you're going to fail to decide. You're going to fail to accept responsibility. But when you stop those limiting beliefs, when you're willing to say, I'm going to act, I'm going to make a decision, I'm going to accept the responsibility, when you do that, here's what's going to happen. You're going to stop seeing the problem, and you're going to start deciding, you know what, I'm just going to go out there and make it happen. You're going to stop waiting for information. Instead, you're just going to go out there and proactively find the solution. You're going to stop asking questions that you can find the answers to on your own. And what you're going to do is you're going to start asking the questions the whole team's got to dig to find so that you can make sure you're growing it to the next level. You're going to stop missing opportunities. What's going to happen is you're going to focus forward. You're going to be able to change your outcome. You're going to be able to stop making the bad moves. You're going to start making the good moves. You're going to watch your career move. In other words, you're going to have a plan for success to create value in your organization to make yourself indispensable no matter where you work. See, I love the way Dondi writes this stuff. And I can't give it credit in a 30-minute radio show. If you haven't bought the book, then to put it in just good old Southern terms, that's just double dumb. You need to go buy the book because it's going to change. You're going to find, I mean, right off the bat, here's what I'll do. You go buy Career Moves today. You read it this weekend. If you don't find one nugget of information in that book, all you got to do is send me your receipt and the book, and I will write you a check because I can always use an additional copy of Career Moves to give to somebody that will use it. So I will do that for you. Number five, overachievers and hamsters on a wheel. Now I had to look at that one for a while. Some things I can just automatically see what she's doing, I can talk about it, but that one I had to look at and say, where is she coming from? And here's what she writes. Remember, everything is negotiable. Right now in your workplace, negotiations are taking place. Sometimes we can miss the opportunity to negotiate because we don't view situations as negotiations. She's saying whether you're an overachiever or you're a hamster, you've got to be looking all the time at the negotiation. Where's the compromise? What can we negotiate? What's a given that we won't back down from? What's a value that we have to have? What's a principle we're standing for? And Where can we flip around this and negotiate where it's a win-win for everybody? And it must be a win-win for everybody. Never look at this as a one-sided deal. Everything must be win-win. I've backed out of deals when I knew they were not a win-win. Sometimes I have been in partnerships for a year, 2 years. And then all of a sudden I realized, you know what? The little thing that was inkling at my mind, I've been able to put a track record on it. And what I'm finding is that this person, what they say and what they do are two different things. That's why I'm blessed to be partners with guys like Tommy Chenault and Jim Gilhouse and a few other guys that we run with, because these guys, what you see is what you get. I mean, if you guys could be flies on the wall when sometimes we're having brainstorming sessions, you will see that we come at objects in different manners and don't even agree with each other. But because we love each other and we respect each other so much, by the time that we are done with those brainstorming sessions, we have negotiated win-win situations for everybody. It's one of the most beautiful things that I've ever witnessed, and it's great. You have to be willing to negotiate. Number six, down the documentation hole. Okay, this is. Listen to this. I am honestly astonished by the rigorous game of documentation that takes place in many organizations. Sometimes I'm amazed that any real work gets done with the furious need to capture and note every infraction and injustice. See, she's not talking about journaling. She's not talking about strategizing. She's not talking about creating a blueprint. She's talking about everybody's got to keep track of how I've been hurt. You got to become that dull, negative, disillusioned crybaby. She writes this. She said, here's two variations in the game. An employee receives a negative feedback at her performance review. This infuriates her because it feels so unfair. See those emotions getting in the way? In response, she plans to document everything she does. She also documents the shortcomings of her supervisor for good measure and makes some interesting notes about her coworkers too. Her diary is filled with tantalizing tidbits. I'd probably call them titillizing tidbits. As she manages to justify and explain her behaviors. Here's the second one. A supervisor is frustrated with an employee's performance. She begins to build her case through documentation. She watches for every infraction and is not disappointed by the number of occurrences observed. Every day she makes a list and checks it twice. Now tell me, seriously. What good is that? You're focused on the negative, and that's all you do is focus on the negative. You don't have to do that. If a person's not living up to their game, I guarantee you they're going to quit. They will quit on themselves. They'll quit on the job, and before you know it, they're gone. They will do something major. They will not have to worry about documenting stuff. I remember I had one employee. And I kept telling him, all you have to do is make sure everything's off your plate at the end of the day. He never would do that. Instead, he'd be playing fantasy football on his computer. I documented the fantasy football. He was terminated. I didn't have to document everything else. I just saw what he was doing on his computer. I had another employee that she liked to party. And by looking at her, she was a party. I didn't have to document that. One day she called in and said, I can't be at work. My mother died. That is the wrong thing to say to Troy Dooley, because I will go to that hometown. I will look for the obituary. And if your parents haven't died, I'm going to call you on the carpet. I'm as bad as Colonel Potter on MASH. She came into work a week later, called her into my office. I had another girl with me. I never met with anybody but the closed door, and said, your mom is not dead. She's alive. There's no obituary. Tell me what happened. She goes, well, I got drunk, I got in a fight, and they put me in this treatment center up here. Okay, well, if you'd have told me that, you'd still have a job. But since you lied to me, you're terminated. Don't document. Focus on the positive. If you can train somebody to be better, do it. You can't get rid of them. Folks, join us this afternoon, Aces Radio Live, where Melissa Williams will be sharing how she can empower you and me. She's a wonderful gal. Tom Hopps, better half. You don't want to miss it. Folks, have an awesome weekend. See us back here Monday morning, Radio for Your Mind. I'll see you at the top. Bye now.